You're listening to the Craft Sanity Podcast, an interview show about art, craft, and creativity. This episode of Craft Sanity is sponsored by Nostalgems, an online jewelry shop that you can find over at nostalgems.com. This week, 10 lucky Nostalgems fans are going to receive one vintage brass keepsake catcher plus a vintage brass fine chain necklace. For more details, head over to craftsanity.com for the link to the Nostalgems Facebook page. Become a fan and get in the drawing and become one of those 10 lucky fans to get some new bling. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 108 of the Craft Sanity Podcast. I'm glad to be back at the mic. I'm very, very excited to have Susan B. Anderson back on the show. Susan is an accomplished knit pattern designer. She's from Madison, Wisconsin. She lives there with her husband and four children. And this will be her third episode of Craft Sanity. So first time I talked to her was back in 2006. And we were talking about her first book, Itty Bitty Hats. And then she went on to write a second book, which was Itty Bitty Nursery. And her latest book, Itty Bitty Toys, has just come out. And if you haven't listened to the previous two podcasts, if you're interested and you want to fully appreciate the whole story, we do recap a little bit in here so you won't be completely lost on this episode if you haven't heard the first two. But if you do want to go back, I'm going to have some links on the blog to take you back to the older podcasts. The first one was episode 46, and then she came back for episode 64. And also with episode 46, there was a Santa baby, little Santa hat knitted ornament pattern. So I'll link to that as well, so you can check that out. There's still time to whip up a few and put on the tree. So anyway, let's get to that story, and I'll have some more information for you folks after the show. So let's get to that interview. Well, Susan, I am so glad to have you back on Craft Sanity. It was quite a while ago that we first talked, and then we got to meet in person, and I'm going to refer all the folks back to the original podcast that we did together. We also did a little follow-up podcast, so I've been following you as your career has just really taken off as a knitter, so congrats to you.
Thank you, and thanks for having me again. It's very nice to be kind of a little regular on your show.
Yeah.
I feel honored.
Yeah, you definitely are a regular. Because it started out with Itty Bitty Hats. Remind me when that book came out.
Okay, that was in the fall of 2006. I came to Grand Rapids. That was my first book tour. And then we got together. Oh, I met you at one of the events. Mm-hmm. And then we met at the library in Grand Rapids. And we went out for lunch. It was really fun. And that was
in tow. Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, with your little sweetheart was there.
Yeah.
And that was really, I really enjoyed that. And then that was in the fall of 2007.
It's great to get to talk to you again. And I know that this has been quite a journey because after Itty Bitty Hats, you had Itty Bitty Nursery, and now you're on to Itty Bitty Toys. You know, one of the things I love about your books, and I think one of the things that's made your work so popular with knitters is that it's completely accessible, and a lot of these projects are, I mean, they're so interesting and so fun, but yet they're attainable. It's not a pattern that you look at and you're like, man, that's great, but I just don't think I can do that. I mean, it's something that you provide options for people who are into instant gratification. And also for those who want to invest a little more time, you have projects for those folks too. And, you know, I have to say in Itty Bitty Toys, I love toys, stuffed toys, softies. You know, I mean, I'm all about those types of things. So this is like loaded with, I mean, I feel like I need to like go on a extended leave of absence from everything I'm responsible for just to work my way through this book because I just love it. And I think the baby doll is really impressive. My daughters have lingered on that page for a while where you actually have a baby with all the accessories really that go with a baby. And the Princess and the Pea, that I think takes the cake. That's an excellent, excellent pattern. So what kind of feedback have you gotten to this book?
I am getting fantastic feedback. I can't really explain the toy craze. That's the knitting toy craze. It seems to have really taken off over the last, I want to say like year or two. It seems like every toy pattern I put out. So I've done some toys, you know, just on my blog. I've done toys. I have a free pattern for Elefante. I think I have a toy in my pattern shop. And then I've done some things for Blue Sky Alpaca. And it just seems like those patterns are my most popular patterns, the toys. They are quick. And like you said, after you learn a few basic skills, really you can master any toy that I've designed. I mean, it's things like knitting in the front and back of a stitch, knitting two stitches together, maybe doing a simple whip stitch seam or doing a make one. I'm just talking about a handful of skills, and all I do is I work on those same concept of knitting in the round, and just through very simple shaping, I can, you know, create a zillion different three-dimensional shapes. So what I try to do, you know how you said I try to make things accessible? That is one of my main goals, and that's kind of some of the feedback I've been getting, is that people see these and they read through and they really feel like they can actually make and create these little toys.
Right,
so,
and that's what's so important when you're trying to sell your patterns. I mean, you want people to feel like, yeah, I can do this, you know.
You know, the simplest patterns are often the ones that are the most popular, because you're reaching such a broad group of people,
right.
Ben. And I love more complicated things too, and I try to throw some of those things in too. But I love that you can make something simple, but at the same time have it interesting and look really rich and fantastic at the same time. And one of the biggest tricks about knitting, in my opinion, is that it looks so difficult to someone who doesn't knit, but the secret of it is that it's really so easy and simple. So, I try to do that. You know, in each of the books and including this new toy book, I start out with a chapter where once you knit the four projects in that chapter, it's kind of progression of projects. You can, the rest of the book is, like you said, a piece of cake. It's so attainable and everybody can do it. So, you know, I start out with a couple projects that are garter stitch squares that are then stuffed and seamed, and you get practice of kind of making and making something in the round. I have some little squishy balls that you knit, and really that ball is the basis for almost every other toy in the entire book. So once you get that concept down and you learn how to do your seam, your little whip stitch seam, which there aren't a lot of seams in any of the projects because I try to do all my work in the round. So, you know, and the other thing is, maybe off on a tangent a little bit, is that I also, I love double pointed needles, and I think tons of other people love them as well, but then I think there is this group who's a little bit nervous about using them, and I really encourage people just to give them a chance, because once you learn how to use the double-pointed needles and become comfortable with them, you can do so much with them. Like, you can increase on one of the needles and keep the other ones the same, and you can really create shapes. And I do use that in the book, and, you know, I want to get some instructional videos up, too, on my blog about starting, you know, small projects on the double-pointed needles and stuff, just so I can show people that it's really not that difficult.
Yeah, I think it's awkward, like, the first time you pick them up. But I'd say within 20 minutes, you can feel pretty comfortable with double-pointed needles. And the great thing about all these things that you're saying, and really, you know, what this all boils down to with the books that you've come out with, especially this last one, the toy book, this is a great way for people that want to get into knitting, if they want to do like garments that fit and they can do shaping and all really, you know, intricate and complicated things. This is a great entry point for the aspiring, you know, knitter out there that, because if you don't have to make, the pressure's off. These toys don't have to fit anyone. You know, I mean,
no.
You just stuff them and you go on, but you're introducing people to all these wonderful techniques that they can then go on and apply if they want to start making garments for themselves or, you know, anything else they want to do. But I think that it's just such a great way to practice your skills and make wonderful toys and gifts, you know, these will make great stocking stuffers with Christmas time coming up. And, you know, I know that a lot of people might think, you know, because your series has been geared for knitting for children, but let's just be honest about this toy book. There's a lot of us grown-ups walking around that want to have these toys. Like, I'm like, oh, I could put them on the shelves in my book, you know, my bookshelves in my office. You know, I mean, I have my eye on several of the patterns that will be totally for myself. I'm not even going to be, I'm not even going to try to conceal that desire at all.
No, don't conceal that. I am the same way. And I've told this somewhere before, but I've knitted tons of toys for my kids. And then I end up, I put them in my little studio work.
Yeah, I take them back. They go to bed. And I have like a little knitted doll on the shelf here. I'm looking. And I have another one made out of like felt that I stitch. It's a hand sewn thing. But oh yeah, I give them to them. And then they're like, oh, and they want to throw it in the toy bin. I'm like, oh no, this one's very special. And then I'm like, totally, what am I teaching them? Like to give a gift and then grab it back.
Yeah, and then take it back. I do the same thing. It's really
but
funny.
I just really feel like, oh, these can't get like messed up in the toy bin, you know, and it's, but it's not really just that. It's just, I want to be able to see these toys.
Yeah, I just like to look at them. Yeah. That's
I mean,
my whole thing.
I'm not sitting here playing with a doll as we're talking, but it's hilarious. I get a great deal of stress relief from knitting, and I think I enjoy it even more when I'm making a fun little stuffed toy. So I think thank you for coming out with this latest book, because it's brought me great joy, and my kids just keep paging through it. You know, they don't knit yet. They're 3 and 5, but they're like, can we make this? Can we make that? And I mean, of course, if I had all the time in the day, I would have made every pattern, but it's, we're working on it.
I think that's probably one of the happiest things about feedback that I've gotten is that kids are reacting so much to the book. And, you know, I have a huge library of knitting books, and I don't know that my kids have ever looked through a single book. That I mean, they maybe have paged through my books, but
right,
not,
right.
You know, so to hear that kids of, you know, all different ages are participating and looking through the book and picking things out and, you know, dog-earing the pages. And I think that probably makes me about the happiest of anything, is that, you know, the kids are getting involved, and who knows, it could really help to turn a group of kids onto knitting that maybe wouldn't have before if they find things appealing.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, because if the kids don't find the projects appealing, then it's really hard to convince them that knitting is a great thing to do. But yeah, so I think you've accomplished that for sure with this book. And I do want to update people, because, you know, speaking of children, those who are just tuning in, if they didn't listen to that first episode we recorded together, let's bring them up to speed on your life. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your family?
Oh, sure. I have 4 kids, and my goodness, they're getting old on me, which is an unfortunate thing, but I can't do anything about it.
How old are they now?
So I have 2 boys who are 18 and 16. They both, 17. He's got a birthday coming up in a few weeks. I'm pushing that, I guess. So,
okay.
No, 17 and 16. And then I have 2 girls who are 13 and 10. So, yeah, I mean, it's been, since I started doing books, there's been a lot of change around here. The kids are really getting older, and unfortunately, too, I think I am, too. that's what happens.
Well,
so we're busy. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're still really young. You're a lot younger than me.
I'm 33.
Yeah.
Yeah, but but you're young. How old are you now?
I am now 45. I just turned 45.
Wow. You know what, though? You look much younger than 45.
Thank
seriously.
You,
no, I'm seriously. I think part of, I mean, seriously, I think what keeps, oh, and this is just, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what keeps you young is that you love what you do. And it's so clear.
Yeah, I do. Well, I try to really enjoy life. So I try to stay happy, and you're right. I feel really lucky that I get to do something that I love to do and I'm passionate about. So I do think that helps.
Plus, yeah. Plus you have a little workout regimen that you do. Cause are you still running every day?
Absolutely. I run every day. I listen to Craft Sanity while I'm running.
How far do you go?
You know, I go about 4 miles a day.
That's great. That's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not fast, but, and sometimes I have to walk up hills, but, I take an hour and I just head out the door and I enjoy the outside. And I even go I ran yesterday in the drizzling, rain, and I just really enjoy being outside and it's just some great thinking time. So I come up with some great ideas while I'm out on my daily run. So I even go, I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and we have some really rough winters sometimes. And I even love going, I go all winter long. I enjoy, you know, dodging ice and snow, and I don't mind at all. I don't know. It's,
so
I know
you,
it's probably strange.
Do you wear those like spike things on your shoes to so you don't slide
No,
around?
I don't, but I should, but I don't, no.
Yeah, I actually have never invested in those either. Every time I go to the store.
I didn't even know they had those.
Yeah,
do they have those for running?
Yeah, these little like bungee cord type things you can put around your shoes, and then they have like these like metal whatever's on the bottom where it kind of helps you get traction. But
I've never even heard of that.
I've heard mixed things from other runners because I've asked them, like, does that really keep you from falling? Because I've had a couple times I've actually fallen down.
Yeah. Oh, I have too. Definitely.
You just totally, you know, totally spill it. And you're like, oh, man. And then you're trying to get up really quick before the neighbors see you sprawled in a snowbank, you know.
I've actually had that. Very embarrassing.
Yeah, they can kind of help you up. It's like, oh, there goes Susan again. But that's how, you know, that's how you know you're hardcore, though, if you're running in the snow. So.
Yeah. You know. Well, I'm not, you know. I'm certainly not any kind of a great runner, but I just kind of plod along, and you know, I think it's just a good thing. Are you still running?
Yeah, I'm running, but I didn't do any competitive races this past mm-hmm. summer. Part of it was, you know, I quit my job, and these races add up. It's like $30 each time you enter a race, yeah. And I'm like, you know, every weekend I'm like, you know, maybe I need to cut back a little bit in my competitive spirit. But actually what happened is my kids now are in activities, and, mm-hmm. you know, we had soccer on Saturday mornings, and that's when a lot of, you know, these races would happen. And so I thought, you know, I'm kind of at a point where I don't think my competitive running should overshadow my children's chance to be in any kind of activities. Because it's like, oh, mom's got to run. You can't be in soccer. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of running on my own. I'm hoping to do, we have the 25K, a big race here in Grand Rapids every spring. And it's the Riverbank Run. So I'm hoping to, I'd like to get back out there and run. I ran just the 10K this past year. And so I want to get back and do the 25. So I have kind of, you know, I'm picking up things when I can, but I'm not as I was into really running every single weekend, racing every weekend a couple years ago. But, you know, as you know, when the kids have activities, you can't, you know, kind of push that aside and be like, hey, kids, mom's got to do her thing. Too bad for you. So.
Yeah, and that only gets worse, as they get older.
I know. I can't even believe, like, just the change from this is our first year in, like, dance and some of the other activities. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So, yeah, with four children, I can just imagine. You probably spend tons of time knitting in your car waiting for people to come out of activities.
Oh, yeah. I always have knitting with me everywhere I go. So, yep. Yeah. It's a lot of waiting time.
Yeah, but it sounds like that's probably helps you, you know, if you know you have a project and then you know that you can go to the game or the activity and sit there and do some knitting, it probably helps a little bit to get things done.
It does, and I'm not a very good sports fan, so it also helps me to sit there.
And be content sitting there.
I'm like the mom who, you know, is chatting and I miss every goal or, you know, whatever.
So that's hilarious.
I'm just not very good. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is. I did sports growing up, but I just don't have any strong interest in being a sports spectator, I guess. That's kind of not a great thing to say. But.
Well, my instinct really is to get out there and play too. Tell me about this other blog that you have and what's going on with the yarn company that you're working with.
Oh, I'd love to. The last summer I started working for Spud and Chloe, which is a new yarn and pattern line that was just released or launched, I should say, at the June TNNA last summer. And it's by the makers of Blue Sky Alpacas yarn and patterns. And so with their fantastic reputation and yarn that they do, I knew this line was just going to be something really out of the box and different and beautiful and usable and practical. And so they hired me. I had done some designing for them for their pattern line, and they hired me to be the curator of their blog. So
awesome.
I love that title too, so it makes me laugh. It's such a good title.
Yeah, it's a great title. It has some bulk to it.
They came up with that, and I thought, oh,
that's a serious title, yeah.
Yeah, so what I do for them is I do blog entries. I do their writing for their blog, and I also am hired to do 1 to 2 free patterns a month that are released on the blog. And the site is spudandchloe.com, and then the blog is spudandchloe.com/blog. And I think as of yesterday, I have 10 free patterns up using the Spud and Chloe yarns, and those are doing really well. They're had some really good response to the free patterns, and their pattern line's doing great, and their yarn is just turning out to be as beloved as the Blue Sky Alpacas line. So the great thing about it is that it's all natural fibers, and then it's also machine washable. So, you know, it's a really luxurious, higher-end yarn line with the natural fibers, and then the plus is that it's machine washable, which oftentimes in that type of yarn line you don't find. So it adds a whole dimension of use for their products, because you can use them for kids, they're durable, you don't have to worry about it. It's all kind of like a fun, happy yarn line. It kind of has a little bit of a retro feel to it. And they have a bunch of new colors coming out in January, which I have sitting on my table right now, but I can't wait to let people see some of the new colors. So it started, you know, fairly, and it's just very easy to understand. It's like three weights of yarn. So it's a fingering weight or sock weight, and that's called fine. Their worsted weight yarn is called sweater. And then they have a super bulky yarn called outer. And oh, it's just the most beautiful classic yarn, and really the sky's the limit with it. I mean, you could just, any project you could find, one of these yarns could apply to it.
Well, it looks, so I've been looking on the site and looking at all the patterns. The patterns look really fun, and the yarn looks great. I haven't had a chance to get my hands on any of this yarn yet. Is it pretty readily available at yarn shops, or online is the best way, or where can people get it? What's the easiest way for people to get the yarn?
Well, it's, you know, it's online all over, and so that is always, if you can't find it locally, that's always the way to go. But, you know, it's getting there. It's, you know, the stores that carry Blue Sky, most of them picked up the Spud and Chloe line as well. But, yeah, I'm just, you know, I get asked that all the time because it's fairly new. It's only been out for 5 or 6 months now, and so it's getting there. But it certainly is available at, you know, any of the well-known online shops that you can think of, like Webs, theyarn.com. It's at Pearl Soho, Jimmy Beam's Wool. I mean, there's a huge list. And you can find all the stockists and the online stockists right on the website. So
okay.
There's a category that you can push, and it'll pop right up. But, yeah, you can definitely find it.
Yeah, I just haven't gone out and looked for it yet. And I know I always try to tell people, too, to, you know, shop local, you know, if you can find it locally. Because we love having local yarn shops where we actually can go in and look at colors. Because if they go out of business, we won't be able to do that anymore. And that's
Right.
Yeah, but it is great, though, if someone sees it, falls in love with a pattern that you've put on the line, and they want to do the exact same thing. If they can't get the yarn, it's locally, you can order online and get started, but it does look great. And so the more colors soon to come, and that's exciting.
Yep. Yeah, so it's exciting. There's a lot. I mean, there's another pattern line coming out soon. A bunch more patterns are being added. I mean, they're adding all the time. And, you know, it's a fun group to work with. They're out of Minnesota, and I just feel a real kinship with this whole group. I mean, we have a lot of similarities, and the owner has family in Madison, and they're just a lot of kind of interesting parallels going on. So it's been a really nice, easy fit, and it's just a great group of super talented, creative people. And for me, it's just maybe the best job I could have ever hoped for in my life, because it's exactly what I do. And, you know, now it's like more of a steady job. So I don't know. I just feel so fortunate to have that opportunity, and I really cherish it. So I'm taking it to heart, and I'm trying really hard to do the best job I can, and I'm glad. It seems like people are really responding and loving it the same way I do. So
and you can just tell that you enjoy it, and that's, I think, makes it fun for everybody. You know, so the patterns are going to be good. You're going to be happy. You know, it's
yeah
great.
I just really, I believe in it, and I think their whole philosophy is fantastic. And just looking at the color names of the yarns, the color names alone, I think it says so much about that company. They, the color names drive me crazy. They're so good.
And give us some examples. Give us some examples.
Oh my gosh, I have my little box sitting right here. Well, in the sweater, they have watermelon, chipmunk.
Oh, I love it.
Come on. It's so good. Splash. It's like this Caribbean blue. Firecracker. I'm doing something right now with the firefly, which is like a golden buttery yellow.
Oh, and awesome.
Firefly, it's just like the little glow of the light.
I love it when, even on like paint chips, you know, they have interesting things. But this is so much more fun than a paint chip because you can actually make a project out of, you know, it's the yarn and it tells a story almost, or it evokes, you know, because I have memories, you know, of chasing fireflies down, visiting my cousins down south.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, I mean, it evokes just the name on the yarn wrapper can evoke,
bring people
to another place, you know, and that's magic.
It does. It's magic. Exactly. That's what it is. I mean, even just reading these color names, I get inspired to, it evokes a feeling, the names of these colors. I'm really into paint color names too. Like all around my house, I could tell you every single paint color, the name of it.
Oh, really? Wow, you remember. That's awesome.
Oh, I remember. Yes, I have a weird memory like that. But a couple, you know, and then they always include some food items, like, you know, for color names, like they have ice cream, which is this creamy vanilla white.
Which is
and
like
then,
the funnest food word I think there is out there.
Oh, ice cream. And then they have toast, which is this kind of warm golden brown, and root beer. It's a dark, rich brown, and popsicle is this yummy strawberry, pinkish red color. It's just, they're so good. And just the other day I was talking to the owner, her name's Linda, and she was, she had just sent me the new batch of colors, skeins, just, you know, the samples, and they didn't have any name with them. So when I talked to her, I said, you know, I have to know the names of these colors. So I made her go through and I wrote down all the names of the new colors because it means so much to me to know the color names. And
does that influence your design at all? Like if you know you have root beer yarn and the ice cream yarn, I mean, does that factor in at all when you're designing?
It totally does. Like, for example, I did one of the free patterns on the blog is watermelon, and that's the fantastic sweater pink is called watermelon.
Oh. So, is that the hat, the watermelon hat?
Yeah, the watermelon
that
hat.
That is darling. And that is so cute. I love that.
Yeah, it's cute. It's cute and easy. And that's been a pretty popular pattern too. But yeah, just seeing that pink, and I thought, oh my, I have to make a watermelon. I can't not make a watermelon. out of this yarn because right. It's so perfect.
Yeah, I think the person who gets the job of like handling all this yarn and naming the yarn, that's fantastic. I would like
that. Yeah, they all do it together. They come up with the names together, and I just wait to hear what they're going to come up with.
That's so excellent. So for you, I mean, this has been quite a transition because I know when you started, I think this might be an appropriate place to do the abbreviated recap to kind of bring people up to speed. You know, you were raising your children and you've just followed this path of you love knitting and it's really evolved into this career for you that is really impressive. Can you talk a little bit about and I know you told the story in the previous episode that we're going to refer people to, but can you kind of, you know, just bring people up to speed about how it is you went from more like recreational knitter to becoming essentially you're a professional knitter and you're an author now and just kind of what that journey's been like.
It is an interesting story because it's one that I think so many people could relate to. And, you know, I have no formal training in design or, you know, any kind of college degree in design or fine arts or anything. I was a teacher for many years and I taught in the Madison School District, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I had taught myself to knit as a teenager. I grew up just crafty and, you know, loving crafts and anything I could get my hands on. So I was always making things my whole life. I loved kids, so I went into teaching. And the whole time I taught, I just knitted like crazy. I would knit at my lunch break. I knit all the time, and I'd be at school and at teaching, but I'd be thinking about my knitting when I was teaching. No, I wasn't. It wasn't that bad, but I did. You know, I just always had this constant obsession with knitting. So after I had my third child, I stopped teaching, and that's when I really started designing. And or actually, it was right before I had my third child, so it was about 13 years ago. And I just went crazy. I just started designing, knitting things, you know, about maybe 10 years ago. I started designing hats. I started out with baby hats, and I'd enter them locally in auctions and all this stuff. And I started selling my hats at a local children's boutique. A woman came into the store there who was a designer for a manufacturing company that is sort of locally. It's right outside of Madison in a smaller city. But they do things like manufacturing for Land's End and the American Girl and, you know, all these big companies. Well, they were starting a new clothing line, and she happened to see my knitted work, and they hired me to knit and design hats for this clothing line that was coming out. And that kind of had its ups and downs, but I did that for a few years on different projects. The main clothing line I started designing for didn't actually ever get launched for a bunch of different reasons. But, you know, that whole experience, I just see that as such a gift because it really taught me how to be a designer. I learned so much just kind of on the job, and it really took my knitting to a different level. I started teaching locally knitting at a local knit shop, and I wrote up some patterns. When that shop closed, I decided to take my patterns, single sheet patterns, take a couple of those, knit up a sample hat, which is the rosebud hat that is in Itty Bitty Hats. I picked I don't want to say randomly, because I picked a publishing company that I had seen a couple books that they had done. It was Melanie Fallick's Knitting in America, which is a beautiful coffee table style book with fantastic writing and photography, and also Kids Knitting, which happened to also be by Melanie Fallick, and the artwork by Kristen Nicholas, who's one of my absolute favorites. And so I sent off an artisan had published both of those books, which I loved both of those books. So I sent it off. Within a couple weeks, they had contacted me to make Itty Bitty Hats. So I didn't start writing my blog until after Itty Bitty Hats had come out. You know, I had only done these, like, maybe a dozen patterns and sold them locally. And so I had never done magazine work. I had never even really tried to do any other work. I didn't have a blog. You know, it was just kind of out of nowhere. You know, I was just this kind of mom who was knitting in Madison. And that's how it all started. So, you know, and then things just have kind of evolved from there. And it seems like it's been just really fun. I never know what's going to come up next. It seems like it's just really kind of an adventure. So it's been great.
I think a lot of times people think they have to have all this experience before they start to do what they really love to do. Like, you have to spend 10 years working for magazines or have this like 100 patterns you've amassed. But, you know, if you believe in what you're doing, and you're, you know, you had a lot of, you know, time to practice. You know, you've been doing this for years before you sent that package off to Artisan, you know.
Right. So it's a long story in that, you know, I've been knitting now since I was 19, so 26 years. But really in the last, you know, 10 years is where it's kind of all started really happening. But you're right. It's sort of like it happened overnight, but not really,
right,
in a way.
Right, because you had that base to kind of build from, you know, because you had been, it's not like you picked it up 2 weeks before and sent it off. But at the same time, you didn't feel like you needed to wait to have 50 articles published and all that kind of stuff. You just kind of went for it. And it's obviously worked out really well for you.
Worked out well. Yes.
And so you're with the same publisher. You've done 3 books. Do you have a fourth one in the works now, or are you taking a little break?
I talked about taking a break, but...
You sound like me. I'm like, oh, I'm taking a break. And then it lasts like 2 seconds, and I'm on to the next thing.
It's not happening. No, I'm already starting on my fourth book, and I think I possibly have a fifth one in the works as well. And
wow.
My publisher is very good to me. They have just been so good to work with. I can't say enough about them. And, you know, I credit a lot of my success to them because they've really taken the time to kind of nurture and help me along just coming out of nowhere. It's not like there wasn't a single soul really outside of a very small group in Madison who even knew who I was. So, you know, I appreciate all their effort and time working with me. So, I have a couple more things in the works coming up. And, you know, at the end of the toy book, I was thinking I would like to take a year off. But now then I got hired for a job and I've got, you know, another book going. So that's not going to happen for me. But,
Is the blog job, is that like a part-time job or a full-time job? Or how would you characterize that job?
I think it's one of those part-time jobs that is more than a part-time job. It's like a part-time job that's a full-time job, but it's, you know, that's probably mainly my fault because I'm always thinking about it and I'm always knitting projects the free projects. You know, I wouldn't even want to venture to add up my actual hours because
that is definitely the downside of doing something that you really love. When I left the newspaper job, I still write for the paper as mm-hmm. a freelancer, but when I left, I told my husband, I'm going to just kind of take a couple weeks off. And he laughs now because he's like, Jennifer, you haven't stopped working. Like, I work every single day, like 7 days a week. And he said, you work like you haven't taken even a day off since August. And I said, yeah, I know. And then I said, yeah, I'm so tired. I really should take some time off. But then the thing is, it's all about art and craft and I love that stuff. So it's it's not like a job that you leave your job and you go home and you don't. Like, I love what I do. So I'm always looking for people to interview or trying to make something it's like I'm always doing this. And while it can be exhausting at times, I totally can relate to you when you say that it's a part-time job, but it's like a full-time job because you can't turn it off. You can't turn it off, you know.
You can't turn it off and then And, you know, you get things offered to you and you just feel so excited about it. It's almost impossible to say no.
I don't know if my mouth can even form the word no anymore.
Right. I know. See, it's hard. It's very hard because you want to do everything, you know, because it's always fun. But, and especially I think when you're a freelancer, your jobs are coming from all different places and,
exactly. You
know, you're right about you're just working all the time and squeezing little bits of work time here and there in between your family life and running your kids around and paying attention to your kids and making dinner. And, you know, it's a busy life. And I know I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see what you're going to do with your new freedom.
Well, I think one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to be, I hope that I can be successful, but I may also run myself into the ground.
You may.
Because my whole taking the break and I'm just not really good at that, like recharging my batteries. So, but you know, it's one of those things where even when the work is exhausting, if you love it, it doesn't feel, it's just not the same kind of exhaustion. Cause I've done the thing where you work, like you're covering a crazy story at work and you're there for 18 hours or so. I've spent the night at the paper before, like continuously writing and covering some kind of crime story or something. And it's not the same kind of, that exhaustion is like kind of an emotional exhaustion, a total, like, I don't want to do this anymore exhaustion where this is kind of like, I'm like, okay, if I can catch a little nap, I can keep going, you know, with what I'm doing now. So it's a little bit, it's definitely a lot different. And
how
do you balance it in your life though? What do you do to recharge your batteries do you ever put down your knitting needles or are you always knitting?
Well, yeah, I'd say I probably am always knitting, but you know, I like to do other crafts too. I've recently started sewing, and I've been just really enjoying that.
I saw that you went to a quilt workshop with your sister.
I did.
Very nice quilt, too, by the way.
Thank you. It looks a lot nicer farther away than close up.
Don't tell
really
people that.
I can't sew a straight line for anything. I mean, it could be a life or death situation and I wouldn't make it because I cannot sew a straight line, but that's okay. I love about it. The sewing, I've made a bunch of bags and I don't know, some fun little pin cushions and silly things, but is that I don't have to be so good at it, and I find that to be kind of a huge relief. So I'm just kind of having fun with it, and you know, I never mind so much if any of my projects, including the knitting projects, aren't perfect. It just, I've never been that way. So, but when you're knitting and the, you know, you're having everything photographed and you have to write the perfect pattern and everything, that puts a different spin on things. But, and you have to be, try to be a real, you know, perfectionist about things. But,
right.
Anyway, but so with other things I do, I'm much more free. I don't dwell on things. I just really have fun with it. So, you know, I do that. I do some little, I do a lot of kids' crafts. I've had some things in Parents Magazine, has published a bunch of my little crafts that I do with kids, and that's things like using old socks and pipe cleaners and feathers, and, you know, I just do silly little things. Like I did some little bottle cap magnets that had some felted petals glued on and made little flowers. And I just, you know, things like that. I like all that stuff. And I think having different interests also really recharges my battery for my knitting, because, you know, even in the sewing, I see things or I'm making things, and it just always brings me back to the knitting. So,
right.
You know, and I like things like, you know, just being outside. Like the other day, we had just this gorgeous 60-degree fall sunny day, and I took my youngest daughter out. We went for a long hike in this nature conservancy right by my house. And, oh, the colors just, you know, that's so inspiring to me. I just love being outside, and the seasons are really inspiring to me. So, you know, I get a lot of inspiration and energy from a lot of different things in my life. So, yeah, it's just an ongoing thing. But, no, I never take too much of a break like you, and I think you're kind of a worker like me. So,
well, I you know, I think there's people that I'm one of the doers. Like I do talk about tons of stuff that I actually don't get to because it's just totally unrealistic.
Yeah.
But I'm aware, I have self-awareness about the fact that I have completely unrealistic ideas about how many hours are in the day. I'll be like, okay, I can get this 5 more things done. And it might be 11 o'clock at night. My husband's looking at me like I'm completely insane. But sometimes he'll wake up the next day and all 5 things will be done. He'll find his wife is like a heap, basically. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted. But
so funny.
But yeah, I will forego sleep. I like, yeah, if I'm on a mission to get a project done. And then I do these TV segments on Fridays on local, the morning show here, where I show people how to make something. And I only have 4.5 minutes. And when I first started doing these, I would bring like 3 or 4 projects every week. I mean, it was like suicidal, basically, to try and do this, because mm-hmm. I'd stay up all night the night before. And, you know, mm-hmm. So it's like I've learned from experience of just, okay, how can I do this in a way that's going to be manageable and actually, you know, not totally overwhelm myself. And I think that's,
you know, I just saw one of your TV segment things. So you do that every Friday?
I do it every Friday. Yeah. And I don't get paid to do it. So
No,
I don't get paid. So it's one of those things where they promote Craft Sanity. So
yeah.
And I put that video on YouTube. It's a little bit insane to do this every single week, but
you don't know what that will end up leading to.
Well, and that's,
you know,
what
you just don't know. It could be anything.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that. And I think if you sometimes, you know, if all of us who make things, if we get really hung up, I mean, obviously we want to be able to make a living, but if you sit there and say, okay, I'm not going to do anything unless somebody pays me, like I wouldn't have done a podcast, you know, I wouldn't have done anything that would have led to getting an art and craft mm-hmm. column that I do get paid for in the mm-hmm. paper. You know, it's like, so I think sometimes you have to just kind of on faith go in a direction and hope that the money is going to follow. And for the most part, I have had definitely opportunities that paying opportunities that would not have come along had I not taken that first step and said, you know, I'm going to
do this. I agree.
You
know? Totally.
I mean, your first patterns that you made, you didn't know if anybody was going to buy them. I mean, there's no guarantee, but you spend the time, you write them up. Some are more popular than others. And then before you know it, if you keep working at it, things do pick up. And I think
they do.
You know, a lot of people, though, maybe they're just smarter than I am. I don't don't know, but they'll stop doing whatever it is sooner if the money doesn't come immediately. But what I found is the longer I do this, the more opportunities I get. And I'm sure you found that. I mean, and you're further ahead in this game than I am. I mean, with three books under your to your credit here, you know, that's really wonderful.
Yeah, but I don't have a TV segment.
Yeah, well, an unpaid TV segment, yeah. You know, you have not made it unless you have an unpaid TV segment, let me tell you.
I think that's something I'm going to aspire to.
The unpaid TV segment. Yeah, I would try to go for the paid TV segment.
You know what, though? If someone asked me to do that, I would do it, too, just like you.
A lot of this is for my own amusement because I felt the sense of urgency since I was a child, like to do a lot of things, like do as much as I could. And I don't know where – it's kind of haunting in a way because I'm like, I don't know what my subconscious knows that I don't know. But I feel like, you know, we only get one chance on the planet. And it's like I try to at least be – like entertain and amuse myself, you know, because it's one of those things where I'm like, you know – I don't think most people would want to like stay up all night to make an apron. And I don't really wear these aprons when I cook ever. Like these are my special aprons for like going and doing craft presentations. I have this ugly black apron that I wear that was like a freebie from some giveaway. I wear that when I cook or bake. These aprons are really just for adornment purposes.
See, and I love you that obsession with aprons. I think that is just so fantastic.
Well, it's fun. So I, you know.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know what's fun about, I've done a bunch of local TV when I've done these book tours. Now, you, at least you have the same three people, but
oh, yeah,
you know, it's
know
really,
me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard to know. You go on with these different hosts and you have no idea where they're going to go.
Exactly.
And you can have something kind of planned out that you want, like kind of your own agenda that you want to get through.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes it doesn't make any difference. They'll take you and you have no, you know, you try to keep some sort of control over where it's going.
Right.
But I found, you know, sometimes it goes really well and then sometimes, oh, it's just been, you know, just a mess. But, you know, you just always try to keep your cool and get your main points in.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really funny for me because I've always been like driving the interview, you know, like, because I've, as a journalist, I've always been, you know, kind of driving where things go. And when, now that I'm in this position where I come on, I'm a guest on the show. I'm not, you know, a staffer or anything. You kind of, it's a different experience. But at the same time, I need to have those experiences because I think it keeps me, anytime I'm interviewed by somebody else, that's always an interesting experience because, and I need to keep having those experiences because it gives me, I think, a lot of, I need to be reminded of what it's like to not have the control because it's definitely unnerving at times.
It is unnerving,
right. It's like, oh my gosh, what is this person going to write or how is this show going to turn out? I mean, what's going to happen? But so it sounds like for you, you've gotten to do quite a bit of traveling, and that's kind of unusual because I know a lot of publishers are doing the blog tours and all that, which just isn't the same, in my opinion, because you don't get – I think it's great. People like to meet the author in person, and you're getting to go out and meet your public. That must be really fun.
It is so wonderful, and I really appreciate that Workman, which is the big company that is Artisan, my publisher, is under the umbrella of Workman Publishing, which, you know, has a whole bunch of different smaller publishers underneath it. And they, it's really, in a lot of ways, kind of more of an old school publisher. And they really believe in touring and promoting their authors. And they also do such a good job of continued support for the author. So it's not just like the new book of the minute. They'll continue to support, you know, the older books that come out. So I feel really lucky to be working with them. And yeah, I mean, I'm traveling all over the country and I'll be gone. I'm in and out through March.
Wow.
And, you know, I just feel so lucky and they they handle everything, for me. And, I really can't say enough about them. They just do a really wonderful job. And, you're right. It is getting more and more unusual, for authors to be able to go out and meet people. And every time I've done a tour, I've gone back to the same places again. And then I've also added some new places like, this tour for the Itty Bitty Toy Book. I'm going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, which I've never been.
Awesome.
I'm going to do I'm stopping in Chicago. I feel like I have more. Well, to Lansing. I haven't been to Lansing before. I've been to Grand Rapids and Holland, Michigan. So I'm adding a new stop in Lansing, which will be really fun. And, you know, they just keep adding on places, and I just love it. It's really fun. Like, for example, I'm going back to Little Rock, Arkansas, to this. They have this huge hat knitting charity drive through the Arkansas Children's Hospital. It's called Knitting for Noggins, and I've done that ever since 2006. And so they have this knit-a-thon, and you go down. They have this big event, and hundreds of people come, and then, like, I'm going to be their guest speaker at this event, and people bring in. They make, like, thousands and thousands of hats to donate, and they ship them off, you know, to different places and for sick children and babies. And it just makes me feel so good. I mean, people are, they take buses and they come to this event. They have like busloads of people, and it's just this huge fun thing. And it just, it's like a feel good kind of activity. So I'm really excited to go back down there again. That'll be my third time kind of being there, one of their speakers at their big event. So, you know, things like that. I just love that stuff. I eat it up. And the other fun thing about touring is that the people who come to your events are the people who really want to see you and meet you. So it's always like a great energy. And, you know, it's just fun to see people. A lot of times people will bring me pictures of their children or babies or grandchildren wearing things or playing with things that I've designed. So I get a big kick out of that. You know, you may have like 20 or 30 people show up at your event, and that just trickles on and on and on. You know, if some events are huge and some are small, but even the small events, you know, you're making contact with people who then go and share with 10 more people. And,
right.
You know,
and then next time you're in town, they bring their friends and say, hey, you got to meet this woman. Yeah. I mean, it's, and I think nothing, I totally understand why publishers have cut back with travel expenses and all that. But the thing is, nothing replaces that human contact of seeing someone, meeting someone that you admire in person. And I think it also, you know, just I'm thinking from my perspective, you know, just observing authors come in. I know Schuller's brings a lot of people in locally.
Yeah.
And it just seems like that connection, the authors really feed off that, having that connection. And does that inform, like, when you go back and you're working on your fourth and fifth book, do you take, I mean, what do you take from these experiences where you hear what people have to say about your work? How much of that informs what you go back and design when you get home?
I take all of it with me. I am like a sponge when I'm out meeting people, and I take every comment to heart. For example, my last book, Itty Bitty Nursery, I had some crochet in there, which I love to do. I'm not a great crocheter by any means, but I love to do some crochet trims and I don't know, whatever. But and I heard from so many people that they didn't enjoy the crocheting part of it. You know, it's a knitting book, really.
Right.
And
knitters
I just would
sometimes
throw
get
in,
nervous about going into the crochet room. Yeah, if they don't
they
know
get
how
nervous
to do it.
About
yeah.
it. And I love crochet, so I love throwing in. But so what, like, for example, for this book, I really took that to heart. And I still have a little bit of crochet in there, like a slip stitch or, you know, a crocheted ear. I can think of one toy. But what I did is I made a knitted option as well. So I would give people choices. You can do the every book toy in the book and not ever touch a crochet hook. Or if you love to do a little crochet, there's a crochet option. And it only came up a few times, but I was really mindful of that because I did really hear that all the time. You know, when I went out, I was so surprised. I had no idea that that was a very strong feeling out there that a lot of people don't know how or don't have any urge, or some say they simply cannot crochet, which I don't know. Is that true? But
well,
they don't want to or whatever.
Yeah,
but I didn't know that. And so that's a great example of, you know, going out and talking to people and then really using that information to make your next book better, you know, more accessible.
Right, because I think I've been continuously surprised by, you know, I'll put projects in the newspaper that people can write in and get a hard copy if they can't download it from the internet. And the things that I thought were going to surely be really popular And then, you know, or sometimes I was way off the mark. And so I've learned so much from just seeing what people respond to. And if I didn't have that dialogue with people where they could email me or I could go out, I'm out at the Y and I'm talking to people who read the column. It's like, it's such a great experience to be able to just, you know, hear what, because sometimes if we're sitting at home and you're making your projects and you think, wow, this is really fantastic. If you don't go and get that feedback, you might be off the mark and not know. So this is great that you're able to then satisfy the people who like to mix crochet in and then those who don't and have it all in one book. And that is a perfect example. So
it's an eye opener to, like you said, you never know what that breakout project's going to be. And you in your mind can have something that you think it's going to be. I think 100% of the time for me, it has not been the project that I would have chosen. And for some reason it's, you know, whatever, the upside down daisy hat or, you know, just something, you have no idea what's going to strike a chord with people out there. And it is just such a useful investment, I think, to allow me to get to go and teach and meet people. And I am doing quite a few workshops, I think, this time around too. So that'll be fun too, because that's always really a learning experience for the instructor to see what people can do and how they respond.
Right, because it's probably different in every locale. You might have really advanced knitters in one spot and beginners in another, or a mix of all of them. And then you have to figure out, okay, how do I do this?
Yeah, it really is.
Does the publisher set up your workshops, or is that something you set up? People, if they want you to come into a workshop, if there's a yarn shop owner out there listening, how can they get you to come to their store?
Well, you know, people contact me all the time. And then I have to say that for this round, I'm really booked up. So I'm not going to be really adding. I'm still having people request, but I'm completely booked up for the next 5 or 6 months. So I can't add anymore, but certainly in the future, people can contact me. My email address is on both of my blogs.
Okay, and we'll have links on Craft Sanity.
So you can contact me, and then, you know, I can send you on to my publicist through Workman, my book publicist. And, you know, for the book tour, they have really planned everything out for me. People have gotten in touch and requested that I visit, and then I pass it on, or, you know, we've made arrangements that way. But, you know, if I don't have a book tour going on, people can certainly contact me, and we can, you know, see if we can work something out. Yeah, like I said, I am pretty booked up right now, so I don't want to give people the impression, you know, that I'm free to
right,
come.
So it sounds like maybe that's more like a summer thing, or with your next book. You know, if someone contacts you and you know they're interested, and it's a place you're going to go. And you know what I forgot to ask you? I kind of let you slip through. I didn't ask you, like, what can you tell us about the next book? Can you reveal anything at this point? Is it another itty-bitty book, or is this going to be
the fourth book?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be something a little bit different, but the same at the same time. It is not another itty bitty book. So I'm venturing off a little bit, but I'm going to be staying within my same realm of knitting small and fun projects. But I don't think I can say too much more about it right now, but I'm so excited about it. And I think people are really going to eat it up. It's going to be really fun. So
this one is not for kids. I mean, just exclusively for kids. This one is going to be for anybody. Would be interesting.
Well, I don't know if I should. I think I can say what it is.
This is me pushing you. I don't want you to lose your book deal, though. I really don't want you to lose your book deal, so just say what you can about it.
I won't lose it. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. It hasn't been discussed yet. But yeah, it's going to be a kid-based book.
Okay.
And so definitely it's going to be a kid-based book, but I think there will also be a lot of adult interest as well. So it's going to be really fun. And, you know, the contract are in the works right now. So if, you know, I think after I sign on the dotted line for good, I can probably talk more freely about it.
Of course, of course. And I'm still waiting for itty bigger hats. I think, didn't you have a lot of people like swarming around asking for like hat patterns and big sizes?
All the time. Yeah. I still do. Constantly.
I think there might be a book somewhere in your future about, I mean, only if you want to, of course, but.
There
seems to be interest.
I don't think there's a week that goes by where I don't get asked that question. And also, I put up on the sidebar of my blog how to make the itty-bitty hats into larger sizes, a step-by-step tutorial.
I did notice that. So you can kind of, in a way, silence people a little bit and be like, okay, here's what you can do.
I was answering that question so often. I'm not kidding. not a week has gone by in the last, you know, years where I don't get asked that question at least once. And so I finally put that up. So now I have somewhere I can refer people.
Yeah, well, that's a clever solution to that. And so it sounds like your life has changed quite a bit. I mean, the same, you're still the mother, you're still mom to these four growing people in your house, you know, your mom, but you're probably more amazing to them. Do you think, I mean, is this amazing to them? Are they amazed and impressed by your stack of books that have your name on them?
Are they amazed? They're probably more amazed when I make them a really great meal. I don't think they don't seem too concerned about any of it. You know, I tell them all about it and I keep them up to date and posted, but, you know, I don't think it's such a big deal
to
them.
Yeah,
which is fine and great, and that's really how it should be. So,
well, how has the rest of your world expanded, though? Because this has got to be, as you said, you know, before your first book came out, you know, outside of your local community, in your opinion, you didn't feel like you were widely known, but that's all changed. I mean, people know who you are all over the place now.
They do, but it's funny, around my neighborhood and around town here, I don't think I don't think people even know really, you know, what I do mainly. So I don't feel, you know, I mean, it's not like.
You don't have paparazzi following you.
No. Oh my gosh. That's so funny. Knitting paparazzi.
The
Ravelry. Can you imagine knitting paparazzi? That's so funny. No, it was funny because I was at a local knit shop. Oh, this was a little while ago now, you know, several months ago, and I took my daughter and we went and got like a muffin and sat and knitted for a while, and no one even ever looks at me twice or glances at me, and you know, I love that, and it's very quiet and peaceful. But then I was waiting for my daughter outside the bathroom door, and I saw these two women like whispering and looking at me really funny. And you know what it was is that, and I thought, oh, maybe they read my blog or something. It's, you know, it's kind of funny. And then, one of them came up to me and I had just posted about this little bag that I had bought. It was a fabric bag that I bought on Etsy. It's called, So Bendy bags. And I love them. They're these little, fabric project bags. And so I had been sharing that, you know, I'd bought these two little, So Bendy bags. And that's how she was looking at my bag, and then she noticed it was me. And
so
she came
it wasn't
up
and, your knitting talent.
It really wasn't my knitting. No, it was the bag. She recognized
hilarious.
The bag. So yeah, it was really cute and funny. And she actually was from somewhere else, and they were visiting the yarn shop. So you know,
it's funny. And yeah, what are
yeah,
the chances?
Locally.
Yeah.
You know, when I do an event too, here in town in Madison, I don't get half the reaction I get, you know, when I go other places. I don't know
Isn't
what
that
it is.
Is that funny? Like, I'm going across the state to teach handmade workshops, and it's kind of a big deal over there.
But yeah, it's probably a huge deal.
Over here, it's not a big deal at all, but it's really kind of funny, you know, because I think most people...
What is that, do you think?
Well, I think it is sometimes, you know, when people know you and, you know, they might think, oh yeah, Jennifer's doing this crazy stuff again. You know, she's got this thing. She talks into a microphone for hours on end, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, oh, crazy Jennifer. You know, it's, I think people can be dismissive of what you're doing. And then when you go outside the realm, if people know you through the work that you're doing, that other people might just think is some kind of weird hobby that you have or some, you know,
right.
some mindless thing that you're doing. You know, I think people who come to discover you through the work you're putting out there into the world have a different level of like respect and interest in what you're doing. And other people that might know you in your daily life, but just haven't tuned into what you're doing. Maybe they don't knit, you know,
yeah.
I mean, if they don't knit, then they kind of, it's hard for them to kind of clue into what you're doing. But I think it's really funny, but I've heard from a lot of people will come, you know, I've interviewed a lot of, you know, just people for the show and for my, you know,
yeah.
in the articles I've written. And, you know, it's really funny because it seems to be a common thing. Like people say, oh, well, the people, you know, kind of locally, nobody really cares.
No one cares.
They do.
It's so
and then they
funny.
Go, they'll go to like Chicago or some, you know, knit shop and, you know, Texas, and suddenly it's like people are all, you know, all thinking, wow, this is the greatest thing. And they're like a celebrity in Texas, you know.
Yeah, you'll have a huge turnout.
Yeah, it's
and
really
people
interesting.
Are just coming in from other cities and stuff.
There's a bus
and
tour. You know?
You're lucky if you can scrape together, you know, a handful of people in town.
Yeah,
like,
it's really,
whatever.
It's one of those phenomenons where I almost think to be, you have to almost in a way leave, go outside your area and then maybe come back and maybe people will be. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I love that because I don't always want to be stopped, you know,
that
at
would,
the grocery
I think
store.
That would bother me. I don't think, I don't plan to ever attain that level of notoriety.
No, and I don't really talk about it much, you know, to like when I'm out at a swim meet or whatever, I don't even talk about it.
Yeah,
so
that must be
I think
for
it's
people.
Good that way.
I think that'd be really weird to have people coming up. You know what I mean? I just think, I feel for like people who are, like celebrity, I don't know how they deal with that. Because if you can't go to the grocery store without having someone take your picture, I mean, that must be a horrible experience. You know, I can't. Yeah. I mean, because I dress kind of crazy sometimes. I'll be like, I have like, you know, a T-shirt on, this like army fatigue T-shirt hanging out of a sweater. I mean, I am not exactly dressed for my photo op, you know. And it's like,
no.
If you're just running in for a gallon of milk, you know, I don't want to have, yeah. So I don't aspire to that ever. You know, so I think it's actually good to have people think you're not that big a deal.
I know. It's good in a lot of ways, I think. Yeah, and I don't really think I'm that big of a deal. So that's what
well,
is probably the key to that whole thing.
I definitely think you're a big deal. You know,
thank you.
You've achieved quite, you know, a lot in a short amount of time, just since your books have been coming out. And I think that you're just accessible because you, when you go out to, I know I've gone to a couple of your events that you've done locally, and it's really fun to see you because I think people find you to be very warm and friendly, and they can relate to you. You know, I think you're someone who doesn't bill yourself as being this, you know, someone that's far above, you know, you kind of, you have this, you know, great talent, but at the same time, you present yourself as being just like the other knitters, which I think people really, really dig that, you know?
Yeah. Because, well, and it's true. So, yeah.
Well, and I think it's empowering for people because if they're like, oh, I met Susan Anderson and, you know, she's really just like me, you know, where it might be a mother who knits and, you know, can relate to all that. So I think it's really wonderful. And I'm excited to see what you do next. And I'm so happy to hear about your other, these jobs that are coming your way. And, you know, as far as getting, you know, being blogging now, you're a professional blogger now too.
Yeah. Crazy stuff, huh?
Yeah, which is really exciting. And I don't know if you have any advice for the other, you know, budding designers out there. Because I know there's a lot of people walking around that are just dreaming of having, you know, a pattern line and, you know, books and all that kind of stuff. And what kind of advice do you have for the folks that might be in that phase where they'd love to take that first step, but maybe they just haven't yet?
Well, I've said this again and again, but I think really anyone can do it. And if you can come up with a great idea, something that's a little different, or just a great take on something that's already around, you just have to really have the courage to try and submit your ideas places, and you never know what is going to catch on. You know, you never know when those stars are going to align and you're going to have someone take you up on something that you submitted somewhere. So I would just say you have to be diligent, you have to be hardworking, you have to be somewhat thick-skinned, because anytime you're putting yourself out there in the public, some people are going to love you and some people are not. So you just can't feel rejected. You just have to keep going and trying, and you can do a lot on your own, you know, especially with the internet and Ravelry. You can release your own patterns. You can start up your own blog. I mean, things are so different than they used to be. And you can really, without anyone, you know, accepting anything you've submitted, you can actually kind of pave your own road and do things your own way. And you can find a lot of success that way. I think there are a lot of people out there who are really creating their own, you know, whatever it is, the career or whatever they end up doing. And that, and you just got to keep going. I mean, it's hard, hard work, and it is knitting and designing and creating, which is fun. It's a lot of work. So, you know, you just have to be able to dedicate yourself if you really want to take it, you know, to a higher level. But it does remain fun. So that's the good thing about it.
Yeah. And that's the part where if something, you're doing something and it starts to feel like it's, you just don't love it anymore. You want to keep yourself balanced for sure. So you're not doing something that turns into drudgery, because that's no fun.
That's the worst. Yeah, that's the biggest creativity squelcher.
Oh, yeah.
Drudgery. I mean, that's like the weight of the world. So, no, you don't want to get in, you know, into doing stuff that you don't enjoy. But, you know, sometimes you have to do things you don't enjoy, too. But it's definitely a passion-driven field. So that's a good part about it.
A special thanks to Susan for being such a great guest and being so willing to share her time with me, since this marks the third stop here at Craft Sanity. Really appreciate that. And I also like to share a couple little updates. Since we recorded this podcast, Susan's book, Itty Bitty Toys, has already gone into its second printing, and that happened just weeks after the release date. So she has really hit the mark as far as being able to come up with books that sell well and are very popular. Thanks again to Susan, and congrats on your second print run there. That's excellent. I'd like to take a special opportunity to thank the sponsor of this episode, Nostalgems. And Nostalgems is running a contest over on the Nostalgems Facebook page. So this week, 10 lucky Nostalgems fans will receive one vintage brass keepsake catcher plus a vintage brass fine chain necklace. For more details, you can go to the Facebook page. I have a link from Craft Sanity to the Facebook page for Nostalgems, so you can head over there and sign up for the contest. It's really lovely jewelry that Rena Ward does over at Nostalgems, so check it out. And a special thanks to Rena for being a repeat sponsor of Craft Sanity. I really appreciate that. You'll probably notice on this episode, if everything went smooth and went according to plan here, you should have noticed faster downloading on this episode of Craft Sanity. I know we were having some problems with slow downloads on the last, it became a recent problem. We're moving the newest episodes to a new web hosting provider, so you should notice that there's a major difference. It should be downloading faster for you. If it's not, for some reason, please let us know. And thanks to the listeners who alerted us to the problem. I'm going to have an update with Carol and Karen from Margaret's Hope Chest. And I will tell you that the quilt drive was a remarkable success. It was fantastic. And those of you who donated quilts, thank you so much for doing that. You're going to hear from Karen and Carol on the next episode of Craft Sanity. I'm going to do a little update. It will probably be kind of like an after show, because it won't be a real long update, but we will have an update from them. I will tell you that they were over 500 quilts as of a couple days ago when I was over there. Yeah, and I also wanted to note, too, that my intention is to try to come out with a show every single week. However, that doesn't always happen. So there have been people who have contacted me and said, am I missing something? You know, what's going on? There isn't a show every week. And there definitely has not been a show every week in recent weeks because I have just been ill. And a special thanks to the sponsors. If I know I have a sponsor for an episode and they have like some giveaway coming up or a special event they're trying to feature, it helps me like be like very motivated to be like, okay, I got to get a show out because I have a sponsor lined up. And, you know, so that definitely helps keep things on track too. So if you want to see the podcast be on a more regular basis, I invite you to be a sponsor of the show and help kind of keep it funded. I really appreciate that. So there's information on the blog on the top left about how to sponsor a show. I do have a couple notes for the after show that's more of a personal nature, and those of you who have had enough can turn it off after the music plays. But so I'll leave you to your crafting, and I'll be back soon. In the meantime, Craft Sanity, my friends, it works for me. All right, welcome to the after show. This week I wanted to just share some news. I think I mentioned in my last little after show that I was ramping up my mileage, you know, trying to get back on track, and I had been sick, and then I got better, and I was running and trying to get my endurance back up, and then I got sick again. Oh gosh, it was like almost like by announcing that I was getting my mileage back up, I got sick again. And I think, I don't know what I'm getting, like this virus that's going around. And I don't think I have swine flu because I'm not like completely laid out. It's just I have sinus issues. So it's just so annoying. And I apologize for my nasally sounding voice. I'm doing my best to try to sleep more and drink my orange juice and so forth so I can be better and shake this thing for good. But yeah, as far as the running goes, I applied to be
a road warrior, and that is pretty fierce title here, but it's basically there's the Fifth Third Riverbank run here in Grand Rapids. It's been going on for 33 years, and it's a race that I ran back in 2007 for the first time, and it's a 15.5-mile race. And back in 2007, it was the longest race I'd ever run, and I went out way too fast. And I mean, I was going out, for me, it was way too fast. I was running like faster than 8-minute miles for the first 5 miles. Pretty crazy. And I was just so excited to be in this race and excited to be 20 some pounds thinner than I was, you know, back in January. And I just went crazy and had to really fight to finish the race. And I managed to finish in like 2 hours and 11 minutes. And the funny part is, when I got to the finish line, I was feeling okay. And then like my blood pressure dropped really, pretty quickly. I recover really fast after races, which is a blessing and a curse. It's great to recover quickly, but then I will kind of start to feel like lightheaded and so forth if I don't try to take the blood pressure down. I want it to go down gradually, not very quickly, because that's when you start to kind of lose consciousness. So, you know, this race ended with me basically like laying on a bench at the YMCA, and it was kind of like I was aware of people around me kind of milling about, but nobody really came to my aid, and I was kind of like starting to fade. I mean, I managed to keep consciousness, but I was like, wow, this is insane. I actually felt worse after that race than I did after running a marathon, which was interesting. So anyway, I ran that race in 2007, and I ran the 5K event the following year, pacing a friend for the 5K, and feeling disappointed that I wasn't doing the 25K again. Then last year, I switched my entry from the 25K to the 10 when I didn't have my mileage up, and I knew that running 25K was going to be just a really bad experience because I hadn't trained for it. So, and I ended up wearing an apron and wore the race apron. yeah, that's a long story. I blogged about that. So if you're interested in reading about my race apron, do a search on the website for race apron and it will come up. So anyway, this year I had kind of, you know, ruled out. They have this thing where they'll have 10 people be part of this road warrior team that trains for the race. You get to train with actually, you know, running coaches, and if you're selected and so forth. And, you know, I thought, wow, that would be really cool. And then I was like, well, I don't really have time for that. Now that's a big commitment. But then I'm like, man, it's probably the only way that I will actually stick to a training schedule. Because what happens is, I mean, I'm a busy mom, just like many of you, and my activities will get jumped off the list because I'm like, okay, I got to take the children here or there, or I'm just too exhausted, and you make excuses. And then next thing you know, you haven't ran in a couple days. And then, you know, you're just feeling like, and then when you do run, it's not the miles you're supposed to. So I knew that if I had public pressure to deliver and made a commitment to doing this, that I would do it. I kind of at the last second applied. You just send in a little statement about why you want to be a road warrior. And there's also some incentives, financial incentives, because you get a membership discount to the YMCA and, you know, a new pair of shoes. And while that's minor when you think about all the hours you have to spend training, for me, that was incentive enough. And I was quite thrilled when last Wednesday I found out that I get to be part of this team, and pretty excited about it. So I will be talking about running in these after shows, and hopefully that won't bore you folks. And what I'm hoping is that this year, well, it'll actually be next year in May. On May 8th, I hope to finish the 25K. I would love to do it faster than I did in 2007. But the big thing is I want to do it smarter than I did in 2007, because I ran like a crazy lady out there. The gun went off, or the starting beep. I can't remember if it was a gun or a beep. And I just took off, and it was insane. I mean, because that's not the way you run a 15-mile race. So, and I know that, but I'm hoping that with some expert training and some, you know, just public pressure to perform, I will step up and run a good race and have some fun out there. So I'll keep you posted on that, and I think it's going to be a good thing. And I also recommend, like, when people ask me after I did the first person weight loss series for the Grand Rapids Press back in 2007, people ask me, like, well, how did you do it? I mean, what was the real key? And I pretty much ran off the weight. But the real key, I mean, the thing that really motivated me was public pressure. Because when you announce to the public that you're going to do something, you know, some physical, you know, feat of, I mean, to me, losing that weight was going to be a physical feat. I mean, that was, you know, it just seemed almost impossible in a short amount of time. I was like, oh boy, I don't know. I knew it was going to be hard, but I knew that if I said I was going to do it, I'd want to make sure that I actually got the job done. So it wasn't really about me anymore. It was about me. Well, it was, I mean, obviously it was about me since I'm the one losing weight, but it was about accountability to the public. So I recommend that if, you know, you have a goal that you want to really put some, you know, added incentive on yourself to, like, actually live up to it, tell people about it. If you have a blog, blog about it. I mean, heck, take an ad out in the newspaper, save a journalist's job, buy an ad. I mean, seriously, I think that anything you can do to go public with your goal is going to help. And I know for me that, at least that works for me. I think the threat of public humiliation is pretty motivating. And, yeah, I survived the Black Friday madness here in West Michigan and ended up buying a die-cut machine, which was, you know, I'd kind of been teetering on the ledge, like I was ready to take the plunge into the wonderful world of die-cut machines, and I did basically a swan dive into the pool on Friday and very calmly walked into a Joann's by my house and bought the, I didn't go for the latest greatest. I ended up getting the size, is it Sizzix? I think it's Sizzix. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing the name of this machine, but I got the Big Kick. And they have newer ones that are black and pink and looking all slick, and the Big Kick is red and white. The aesthetics of it are not the greatest. It's not a pretty machine, but it gets the job done. What sold me on it is, I have an aunt, or actually it's my husband's aunt, who sells Stampin' Up! Supplies, and she's really big into paper crafting. We happened to be over there at Thanksgiving, for a Thanksgiving party, and she, I said, hey, you know, does that thing cut fabric? And she said, yeah, I'm pretty sure it does, that she hadn't actually used it for that yet. So she ended up getting some fabric out, some felt, and she cut it, like, really, I mean, like butter, and I was like, whoa. I'm like, that could change my life. So my quilting is going to be, now I'm going to be using, experimenting a little bit with some die cut materials. I've already made some brooches out of felt and very excited about how quick that happened, because I've, up until this point, everything I do with felt, I've been cutting everything out very slowly. And I think this is really going to change the way I craft. I don't do tons of paper crafting, so I don't think it's going to, like, turn me into a famous scrapbooker or anything like that, but I just really have enjoyed the time I've spent with this machine on a very limited basis. And the kids really liked it too, so they were able to kind of turn the crank and, you know, with supervision, of course, because I definitely would not want to have a 4- and 5-year-old operating this machine by themselves. I think it would be hard for them to hurt themselves. I mean, they'd really have to try hard to do it, but I definitely don't, it's not a machine to have kids working at unsupervised. But anyway, for those of you who have die cut machines and know all about this, this is totally old news. But those of you who were thinking about getting one, I ended up going, I researched the other more expensive machines, and I thought, well, what ruled them out really was the expense of it. And the machine I bought on regular price was about $100, and I believe it was 40% off, and then I got another 20% off for the early bird special there on Black Friday. There, no one was clamoring for this machine, which in a way put some questions in my head about, okay, if no one's trying to get this machine, why aren't they, you know? But there were people trying to get the machines that retail for about $300. There's a couple different ones that are, you know, electric and, you know, so far, and kind of look like a printer. And there's a couple different brands out there, and I'm not going to name brands and all that because I have not spent time with these machines. I've just done some research online, reading, and one of the things that I just have concerns about, some of these other machines breaking because they are electronic and so forth, and I know I've gone through so many printers that I'm just like, oh boy. I kind of like the whole manual function of the big kick that I got. And what I also like about it is that I was able to get it for pretty cheap, less than half the cost. So that was fun. That was a kick to do that. I'll post some of the projects that we've been doing so you can kind of see. I'm not going to convert to completely like only doing die cut machine based projects. I know that would be really annoying because I was always kind of annoyed when I'd see these kind of cool projects online that were done with die cut machines. And I'm like, well, that's great. I can't do that. So I'm not going to completely change the way I craft, but I can tell you there will be some influence. And the loom business is going pretty steady. I am not making looms 24/7, but it's been really fun, and I've gotten to ship them all around the world. And the last two orders were actually from Michigan buyers, which was really fun because it's always a kick to have someone that's kind of local invest in what you do. So that's been fun. I'm trying to finish a rug on the largest loom that I make, and I just made a little banner to hang around. I had photographed it over by the mantle, but I think I'm actually going to move it to a doorway so you walk in. It's a little banner that's going to have red and green squares from the mini loom that I make. And yes, I'm kind of doing a lot of Christmas decoration stuff, and I'm trying to do a stacked Christmas tree out of the various sizes that I make. So we'll see how successful I am with that project. The one frustration of the whole loom business is just having less time to weave myself, but that's the reality of any handmade business, is that a lot of what you're making by hand becomes your stuff that you're using for your business. So it's kind of funny how that happens, but I do enjoy making the looms, and I enjoy it's quite a bit of satisfaction that you get out of boxing something up that you made and sending it off somewhere. And it's my hope that, you know, the people that open these boxes are going to make some really fun stuff, and maybe it means they're going to spend time with a child or grandchild, niece or nephew, or a friend just making, you know, whether it's pot holders or bags, handbags, or placemats or rugs or whatever. So I feel good about knowing that, you know, I'm hopefully inspiring people to make things with these looms. So that's been really fun. I have a lot to learn about sales. I'm learning more about shipping. Finally started doing click and ship. For those of you who live in the United States, if you do have a handmade business, I do recommend the click and ship option from the United States Postal Service. You can save, you know, roughly, you know, 50 cents to a dollar on each package because you get your priority mail confirmation is free. So that's kind of automatically if you do print out your labels with your home printer. You do need a postal scale if you do this, but you get that automatic free delivery confirmation, and you save a little bit. If by printing at home, the rate is a little bit lower than if you go and stand in line at the post office. And then what you do is you just you print out this receipt, and they will stamp it to verify that you really did, in fact, mail the package. So you have that for your records, but I've kind of slowly, Jeff has been helping me with the whole packaging and shipping aspect, and the first day it was hilarious. We had a couple, you know, just like four packages to send out, and we took like the whole time that Amelia was in preschool to like figure out like what to do. And I'm not trying to scare you off. It's not hard. It just was funny as we fumbled around trying to get the scale to work and, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, what do you do exactly? We probably shouldn't have done it on a deadline where we had to pick up a child. It probably would have gone smoother if we had a little more time. But yeah, so that was an adventure. But it's a blessing to be able to make something in my home and not have to be working somewhere else. And so that's been really fun. So thanks to all of you who have purchased looms. I really appreciate that. And I think I'm looking to just wrap up some projects, some loose ends in 2009, and I'm excited to do some new creative things in 2010. So, yeah, I think the handmade gifts are my biggest goal right now, just getting some more handmade gifts made. So, I hope all of you have a lovely week, and I'll be back soon with another episode of Craft Sanity. So, and hopefully my voice sounds better next week. I'm going to do my best to come back a little healthier than I am right now. So stay well, everyone. Drink your orange juice, take those vitamins, and sleep. The older I get, I'm growing to appreciate how important it is to get enough sleep. So Mom, if you're listening, I'm finally getting the message. Okay. Take care, folks. I'll be back soon.